So welcome back. I'm Sue Zappel, and I'm going to talk about the third foundation of mindfulness. By now, you know, it's so lovely to have this day of mindfulness where we can become still, get into our practice, just feel really the ground of stillness. One of the teachers that we point out on our resource list, Gil Fronsdale, from California, has a 12-week series on the four foundations of mindfulness. And he talks about these foundations as a process of deepening intimacy, getting more and more in touch with our inner lives, which we've been doing today. So starting this morning, Susan invited us to get really close in to what was happening, not just on the surface, but from, you know, really going inside. From this first foundation, we get some really important information. It's where we first start sensing what's going on, what are we feeling. And then in the second foundation, Anna talked about that feeling tone and how the pleasant or unpleasant is not in the object, but it's in our minds. It's what we add to it. Gil says that at that point of the second foundation, we become the custodian of our own mind and heart. We really start to see what is present. And referring back to Joseph Goldstein, he says, we do that process of getting intimate and becoming the custodian, we do that with non-reactive awareness. Another description of that is from the teacher Anilayo, who has written a whole very wonderful book about the Satipatthana Sutta, and he calls it uninvolved receptivity. So both of these teachings of getting more and more intimate with our inner lives and bringing that uninvolved receptivity or that non-reactive awareness are really helpful as we begin this third foundation, the mindfulness of mind. So why is this foundation so important? We train the mind so that we don't act so impulsively and out of old habits and reactivity. We train the mind so that we can know the mind and we can act from a responsive place, appropriately, skillfully, in line with our values. I remember when I first heard the teaching about mindfulness of mind, I thought, how in the world do I do that? How can I know the mind through the process of the mind? Because over the years of listening to teachers, you know, we've all heard many times the teachers say, now don't believe everything you think. So there's a way in which we're told not to really trust the mind. But this is different. We're not examining the content of our thoughts. We're examining what the state of the mind is, what the attitude of the mind is. In this foundation, we're practicing not getting involved in the content, but really looking at just kind of the underlying condition of the mind. The teachings talk about 8 different categories of these states of mind. And I'm only really going to talk about the first 4, because the second 4 have to do with levels of concentration and absorption that are really more than what I think we can do in 15 minutes as part of our day long. So the first set of categories are really the most important for us today, and they deal with what we call the 3 poisons: greed, hatred, and delusion. And how do we do this? Well, moment after moment, we ask ourselves, what is the state of my mind right now? Is there grasping? Is there greed? It's like, it's this next step after what Anna was talking about. So the juicy steak picture was up. And for some of us who still eat steak, it was really pleasant. And then we made a whole bunch of things about, wow, maybe I could go to the store and buy a steak and who would cook it for me on the barbecue and stuff. And for Anna, it was like, get it away from me. And I can't believe that, you know, people are still eating that and it looks gross and this is that and whatever, whatever. I'm projecting it to her mind. But it's where we take Vedana and it starts conditioning the state of the mind into either that grasping or pushing away. We all have stories that come up about what we want, what's next, how we're going to do this or that. And we also know that there are moments when the mind is free from greed or wanting, where the picture of Mount Rainier came up and it was so lovely, but I didn't go into, oh, I can't, you know, my knees aren't going to let me climb that mountain. Or, oh, I wish I could go camping there or nothing. I just said, oh, love Mount Rainier. And that was it. So there was a mind kind of free from greed about that. The second question, is there hatred or ill will? You know, we're not in this practice indulging and rehashing the story that happened at work yesterday that really got us onto this aversive train ride. You know, that person who did what, or the project that wouldn't work, or the computer that whatever happened. We're not examining the story of it. We're looking at what is going on, what kind of state of mind do we have. We're just stopping and looking at what the mind is like right now. No judging, none of those, oh, here I am again, filled with all this ill will. No, we're just knowing that that's happening. This mind at a time, at sometimes is filled with aversion, is filled with ill will. I don't know about you, but in these political turmoil times, my mind is often filled with ill will. The third of these three poisons is delusion. Is there confusion or delusion in the mind? In one of Gil's talks, I think it was the sixth in the series, someone asked a question, how does a deluded mind know that it's deluded? Which I think is like such a good question. So he gave one example, and then I have a couple more. He gave the example of watching TV. So something's going on and we want to either get distracted or entertained or maybe even educated. Maybe we want to learn something. And so we find something to watch. But it's not really very satisfying. And so we take our remote and we switch to another station and we look at that, you know, for a few minutes. And then that doesn't really work. And then we just keep on doing that over and over. That is that deluded mind. Unsettled, confused, not sure what it wants, just kind of all over the place. Another way to know that the mind is deluded is when there are those thoughts of permanence, that thought that says, oh, this is going to always be here. You know, I'm always going to feel this way, or things will never get better. When those kinds of thoughts of permanency are present, it's a pretty good chance that the deluded mind is present. I've realized when Linda gave the introduction, she said I was also going to talk about emotions. And I hadn't put anything in my talk about emotions, but I think this is a good place to say something about emotions, because later on I'm going to talk about moods. And moods, like emotions, they really can condition the mind. Here in the West, I don't know why this is. Maybe somebody with a psychology background could understand this better, but we give a lot of weight to our emotions. So many of us have found ourselves saying, but I just feel that way. So that's the way it is. It's like it's some kind of ultimate truth because this emotion is up. So even with emotions, we're encouraged to note that the emotion is up, but then see how it conditions the mind. What happens when disappointment is up, or anger, or sadness? What happens with the state of mind? So when we're noticing the presence or absence of greed, hatred, or delusion, we also sense whether there's Vedana present, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Most of the time when greed or craving is present, when we really examine it, it's kind of unpleasant. But initially, greed can feel really good. There's that energy that gets going and anticipation and fantasy. And so the practice with this third foundation is to keep quieting and settling and going beneath, to keep asking the question, what's really happening here? I think when we really quiet down and we sense what's happening in our minds and our bodies, we know that craving, that clinging, that kind of have to have kind of sensation is really unpleasant. The mind, when it's in the grip of greed, hatred, and delusion, is often really tight and tense. We're asked to consider wholesome and unwholesome states. With a quieter mind, we can connect to the unwholesome nature of greed, hatred, and delusion. And part of the way of understanding that is when we connect to what we really value. So going back to my example of how greed or craving can feel initially kind of pleasant, but when we really get back to what do we value most as Dharma students, we want to be settled enough that we can see clearly what's really going on. And so as we connect with what kind of the ethical quality of the mind, we know that what's really happening here. One of the examples about kind of going a little deeper is, as I mentioned, in these really turbulent times, I find myself often responding with anger or outrage. And on Tuesday night after what we call a debate, I was pretty much filled with that. But the next morning as I woke up, I realized that below that anger really was a powerful emotion and mind state of sadness and compassion. I feel so much sadness for where our country is right now, all the division and animosity and what has happened with that for all of us, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum. So what initially felt like an aversive mind state was really an attitude of compassion for all the pain that was present. So I encourage you, as we practice with greed, hatred, and delusion, to really dig a little deeper beyond what your first thought is as to what the state of mind is. The fourth category after greed, hatred, and delusion is to notice whether the mind is contracted or distracted. And this has to do with kind of energy levels and what is happening internally and externally. Contracted or withdrawing, it's kind of can be kind of a dullness, a low energy, and it's sometimes associated with the hindrance of sloth and torpor, which Lindell's going to talk about. The fourth foundation will probably be mentioning the hindrances. Distracted is usually distracted by external phenomena. It often includes that kind of pursuing of sensual objects externally, and it can lead to restlessness. We all know these states of mind of too little or too much energy that's kind of unrestrained. As I mentioned, the last four categories are ones of higher levels of consciousness and related to the depths of concentration, so I'm not going to be talking about them. But I'd like to suggest some practices for how we deal with this. So we're invited to look at what is skillful and what's not, what is wholesome and what is not, but not to judge ourselves when they're present. these different mind states are not a problem. They're just visitors. They're just part of the path, arising and passing away, just like everything else. Just like Susan and Anna were talking about earlier, you know, that we know that sensations arise in our bodies and then pass away, that something that is pleasant to begin with might turn unpleasant later on. The teachings acknowledge how this practice can be really challenging, but we're encouraged to hang in there because Joseph Goldstein says, mindfulness of these mind states is the path to freedom. I love one of the things Joseph talks about often in his teachings. He says, short moments, many times. So every time you stop and look and notice the attitude of the mind, you don't judge it, you watch it, you note it, that's a wholesome or skillful moment. One of the key elements of a vibrant meditation practice is bringing a strong level of interest to whatever is happening. We started out this morning with Susan saying, bring curiosity and wonder and kindness and interest to what's going on. So we're interested in what's happening in the body. We're interested in how the mind identifies things as pleasant or unpleasant. And in this third foundation, we're really interested in what's the mind engaged in? What's the mind interested in? Again, we're not following the content. It's that uninvolved receptivity, that uninvolved awareness. Once you're back home, or you're already home, but once you're not on the day long, a really good way to practice with this is to keep kind of a mood journal. So you start out every day, and as you first get up, I mean, Susan, after you do some of the stuff Susan was recommending about the body, you can ask yourself, what mood is present? You know, just take a couple minutes to really ask, you know, what's the mood in the mind right now? And if it's maybe irritable, say, oh, irritable mind is present. Not I'm irritable, but just irritable mind is present. And if possible, as you get ready for your day, maybe taking a shower, fixing breakfast, coffee, whatever, maybe every 10 minutes or so, ask again, what's the mood in the mind? And see if some of that irritable mind might be changing. What if part of your morning is to go out into the garden like Lauren and I do almost every day? And there's something about being out in the garden that it doesn't matter what my initial mood is, I come back in feeling different. You know, there's just kind of a connection with how it smells and what it looks like, and everything just seems a little bit more okay. So some key points as we're going to start our meditation. You're still noticing what's happening in the body, but it's a little bit more kind of background or ground. You're still aware of Vedana, but again, those questions are in the background. And you're adding a new question. What is the state of mind right now? As you're sitting there and things change, thoughts come in and out, sensations arise and pass away, ask yourself, is there greed? Is there a craving? Is there a grasping? Is there some aversion? Are there some thoughts that have come up? Is there some ill will? If there's an uncomfortable body sensation, are you aware of being aversive, wanting things to be different? Or are you basically feeling pretty equanimous? Yes, there's some tension. I can feel some tension or contractedness, but the mind is not adding anything. So we keep doing that. We're going to be doing that for our time in this meditation. I'm just going to check my time, so we're good. Amalayo says that with ongoing, uninvolved receptivity to the states of mind, the state of mind will gradually loosen its power over us. So we do this practice to know the mind, to train the mind. And it's such a wonderful following up after the body and Vedana. I mean, the Buddha was so smart how he, not only he did all this, but he put it in some real logical order. So I welcome you to get yourself comfortable. You might have a different posture for listening to a talk than for sitting. If you want to get up and stretch for a minute and then sit back down, feel free to do that. I'm going to borrow or echo Anna's instruction. As we sit for our third time today, or maybe it's the fourth, maybe you had a sitting even before our day long started. What's your intention? What can we bring to this sitting of presence, of interest, curiosity, wonder, non-judgment, a container of kindness for this body, mind, heart that is present with all of what is happening in our lives, in our bodies? If you generally close your eyes, then I'd invite you to do that. If you keep your eyes open, just look slightly down at the ground. And as we usually do, know that you're sitting. Know that this body is sitting in the chair, on the bench or cushion, or lying down or standing up, wherever you are. Know your posture. It's upright and alert. Feel the breath. Feel the body sensations. Perhaps feeling your feet on the ground and the hands in your lap. A first question might be, what's my energy level? It's midday, I've had some lunch, I've been at this day long. Being really honest with ourselves, am I feeling a little bit sluggish? Maybe stand up for a few minutes. Maybe increase the uprightness of your posture. Or take three really deep inhales and exhales, and just bringing some more of the energy that comes just from our breath. Or if you're feeling a little restless, maybe too many cups of coffee this morning. Again, finding the breath that can help settle you down, feeling the body. And in this place of stillness and groundedness and awareness, uninvolved awareness, we ask ourselves, what's the state of our mind right now? What's the attitude that's present? As you notice things occurring, sensations that arise, thoughts or memories that arise, whenever possible to ask again, what is the state of mind? How are these memories, these thoughts, these experiences conditioning that state of mind? What happens with stories of craving and greed? What happens to the state of mind? As best as you are able to not follow the content of the story, but focus more on the state of the mind, the attitude of the mind that's present. As always, we do our best. And when we get lost, we come back again, grateful for the awareness that said, oh, you're lost. Come back to body and breath and mindfulness of the mind. what's happening in the mind in this moment. Contracted, distracted, craving, pushing away, confused. With an uninvolved awareness and receptivity, keep asking the question. And when there are moments where the mind is balanced, equanimous, it's just watching what is arising and passing away, not getting all caught up, just stopping and looking, knowing what's there, those are really wholesome moments, moments of freedom. small moments many times. In these last moments of our sit, I'd like to invite you to express some gratitude to this mind that can know what is going on, this mind that doesn't have to get involved in all the content, that can be non-involved but still really receptive. And bring awareness. This mind that keeps us on the path, where there are these moments of equanimity, balance, of just being present. Thank you, mind. So now we have 15 minutes for a walking period. Then when we come back, Lyndall will lead us into some instruction and talking on the fourth foundation. Then we'll have some breakout groups and end with some large group Q&A and ending our day with metta and offering of merit. So I'd like to give some instruction on walking with mindfulness of mind. And I was trying to figure out, well, how do you do that? Because really walking meditation seems so focused on the body. But when I went to Thich Nhat Hanh, some of his instructions, he talks about how walking meditation brings body and mind together peacefully. And that we start with a really calm place. And when the body and mind both are calm, we can really see clearly. So perhaps you don't like walking meditation. Maybe generally you're just right now, you're not in the mood for it, say. So you notice some aversion in the mind. Or you really love walking meditation. You prefer that to sitting. And so you like, oh, yay, you know, here I am. And why don't we walk more? And so you just notice what's happening with that kind of energy in the mind. You can see the wanting and the not wanting, the confusion, the different levels of energy. And have real compassion for ourselves. You know, aversion in the mind feels like this. Wanting in the mind feels like this. Sluggishness feels like this. Restlessness feels like this. And we're walking with that kind of uninvolved awareness of what this body and mind feel like together, peacefully. Try really to avoid rushing around. Because when we're rushing, we really don't know what's going on. We don't really know that we're walking. So taking some slow steps, really feeling the body. Know that the mind is here. It hasn't gone anywhere. So we're going to be bringing that non-involved receptivity to whatever is happening. Bring that interest. And come back at 1:45 and enjoy your walk.